Hi, this is David Spray, and welcome to another episode of the IC Disc Show. My guest today is Heidi Henderson. Heidi is the Executive Vice President for Engineered Tax Services based in Southern Florida. However, Heidi is based in Utah. This was a great episode talking about her background, how she got into the real estate business, and then how that translated to joining Engineered Tax Services about 12 years ago, doing cost segregation work mostly on real estate projects. We talk about some of the differentiators for Engineered Tax Services, what clients say about them that makes her really proud. We also talked about some lessons that she's learned through her career and advice that she would give to her 25-year-old self. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hi, Heidi. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, as am I. So I always like to start at the beginning. Where are you from? Where were you born?
Oh, where was I born? I am a Northwest girl. So I was born in Seattle. And my dad was actually a Chevron exec. So we moved every 7 years.
Okay.
So went from Seattle. We then moved to Northern California. We were up around Marin County. And then we moved to Portland, Oregon. Graduated high school just outside of Portland. Went to college in Eugene. And then I ended up sort of migrating to Utah. I discovered the mountains and there was no rain. So
a little different than the Pacific Northwest, huh?
Yes, just a little bit. Yeah.
So that's great. And then you went to school in Eugene?
Yep. I went to school in Eugene for a couple of years and really enjoyed that. I was fortunate enough to be an athlete through high school. I was trying in college and ran track and field. And Eugene is such an amazing place when it comes to track.
Sure.
And so I felt very blessed to spend some years there running on the track there and going to Prefontaine meets, and just there's such an incredible history there. So that's one thing I just absolutely love about that area.
That's awesome. And what events did you specialize in?
Well, if you were playing video and I'm standing up, you would see that I'm very tall. So it's funny. People look at me and say, oh, you must be a long distance runner. And I said, oh, on the contrary, my coach knew really quickly that he had this running joke where he would tell me to run and I would whine and complain. And I was like, no, don't make me run. And so then after probably the first year, he quickly realized that my joke was that I was good for 10 steps and that's all. And so it was a 10-step approach for the high jump.
Oh, a high jumper. Okay.
Yep,
yeah, that was my, when I ran track, I was a high jumper, long jumper, and 100-meter guy. So I was always a fast twitch muscle guy.
Yep.
Anything, to me, 200 meters was long distance.
I know, right? And I swear there's some people just built that way, and some people built for more of the slow twitch endurance type sports and just have more of a capacity for that. And I just have never been able to develop that very well.
Understood. So you ended up, I see you graduated from the University of Phoenix.
Yep. I ended up finishing in Phoenix. So I jumped around a little bit, but got my master's in tax and went into accounting, which is interesting. Had some fun with that for a while. Yeah.
And so did you always want to be an accountant from an early age, or was it something that an interest that developed later?
Gosh, this is taking me back. My coach, this is really going back, kind of a big backstory, I guess, but it was one of my high school teachers, my homeroom teacher, I guess, in high school, freshman year, encouraged me to try out for sports. And he was a computer guy. And
okay.
He really encouraged me. And this was, before computers, I think. This was a wild late 80s. And, we had the first computers and we were doing DOS. And he started encouraging me in that field and encouraged me to play sports. And he was a huge impact on my life. He was a huge mentor to me. But he also was part of our sort of business part of our school, I guess, our education team. And so I just kind of funneled into business, and I took a number of classes. And then I got a scholarship when I was a sophomore to attend a entrepreneurial business camp.
Okay, that's cool.
It was really cool. And it was really inspiring because it was, you had speakers there. You know, you had the founder of Weyerhaeuser, you know, huge wood manufacturing company there in Oregon, and some other big companies there that were really talking about being entrepreneurial and running businesses and all those things. So it did start at that point with having kind of that entrepreneurial and also business mindset. And accounting, I am actually very analytical. And so that seemed like it would be a good study course for me to really sort of understand the money side of business and would help me be more successful. So that's kind of how I ended up on that track.
Okay. Yeah. And I would imagine, and based on my high jumping experience, that's the perfect sport for somebody very analytical, because you know the exact number of steps you're going to take, you know, to like the inch where you want to start from. And so, yeah, it lends itself to perpetual analysis and refinement, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know what? You hit the nail right on the head. It is absolutely one of the most technical sports, I think, or activities, because it is, you know, it's a ton of critiquing and there's a lot of form. So lots of video and then analyzing videos and working on every single movement to kind of improve that. And then, you know, fast forward, I'm also now actually an equestrian. I've always been a horse lover. So I show dressage horses and I always joke around. I said, this just follows suit my whole life. As I love the very black and white, a very clear path forward that is very, very, you know, it's very analytical, very defined. And, you know, apparently that's the way my mind functions well. It gives me something to strive for. So my ambition is always pushing towards the next step and the next level. So yeah, I think I felt that through my track career and then through college learning accounting and just kind of going up from there.
That's awesome. What was your personal record height that you jumped?
In school, I'm very proud of the fact that I was the state champion in Oregon in high school for 2 years, and I still have the high school record for the highest high jump there in my high school, which still stands. And that was 5'8.5". In college,
wow.
I did clear 6 foot, which was really only one time, but I was pretty happy about that.
That's amazing. That's almost as tall as you are. You high jumped virtually your height.
Yeah. Yep. Just about.
That's awesome. So you finished up at school and decided that commercial real estate was calling you, I guess.
So
how did that happen?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is when I was in college, I needed a job. So I actually went to a temp company and I didn't want a full-time job because I was studying, going to school, and I was playing sports. So I didn't have much time. So I went to a temp company and said, you know, I just need a temporary job for times when I'm on vacation or it's the holidays or something like that. I ended up getting a job at a real estate brokerage, and they were a commercial real estate broker. And they needed a temporary receptionist while their receptionist was going to be out of town for 2 weeks. And I went there and started working as a receptionist. And this was like my freshman year in college. So it was pretty fresh out of high school. And it was a woman run firm. She was the broker and was running a very successful brokerage there. And she just took to me. And she, again, was a huge mentor in my life. And when the 2 weeks was up, she said, I want you to stay. And she said, how about you start helping me with some accounting? And actually, back to your question about how did I end up in accounting? Now that I think of it, it's coming full circle. This is how I ended up in accounting.
Really?
She said, how about you help me with some of our books? And I was like, I don't know anything about that, but okay. And she said, you can come in whenever you can. I only need you for about 5 or 6 hours a week. And I said, well, okay, I can do that. And so I started working for her just a few hours a week here and there to come in and handle her books and to balance her accounts and do some accounting stuff. I was learning a 10 key, and she kind of coached me and taught me through that. But I was fascinated. First off, these people in this group were doing very well for themselves. They were driving Porsches and, you know, really nice cars and having parties with all their friends. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. And I was definitely intrigued. And so I actually worked for her for a couple of years as just kind of a part-time when I could in between school and sports. But it really started to open my mind about everything real estate. But it was the tie between real estate and accounting that is really where my focus was. And that just literally started the trajectory of my whole career because of that interesting blend between my real estate expertise with my knowledge of accounting.
Yeah, because it seems like that's the necessary background to have some cost segregation capabilities.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, what happened is eventually we kind of fast forward a few years and ended up moving to Utah. I ended up becoming the assistant controller and then later the controller for a resort, a destination resort in Utah. And, you know, had a ski resort and a golf course and restaurants and commercial and some retail developments. And I was working with the managing partner who, again, was another mentor. I was lucky enough to have another amazing mentor in my life and was working as the controller for that group as we were building this resort. So it was really dynamic, really interesting. And again, I was doing this controller, kind of tracking costs, but it was really interesting because we were building it. So there was a lot of thing and strategy and a lot of things happening. And as we went, this was in early 2000s, I really enjoyed it. But as the resort began to kind of finish up, sort of develop, it became a more traditional role.
Okay.
As a controller. And I realized I maybe don't like this so much. I'm not talking to people. I'm not getting out. I'm sitting at a computer a lot. And I need something a little more dynamic and challenging. And so, you know, this brings me to where I am today. My sister happens to be my business partner.
Okay.
And my sister had started.
Is that Kim?
Yeah.
Is that Kim? Okay.
Yep. Kimberly Lockridge. Kim had come to me and she said, you know, Heidi, I'm working for this company. It's been fantastic. I think there's a lot of great opportunity. And she said she'd come from a different educational background. And she said, you need to come work with us. And I said, no, that's probably a pretty bad idea. And she said, no, you don't understand. Your knowledge of tax and real estate is literally perfect for what this entails. And I said, well, I don't even understand what you're doing. I don't even know what this is. Like you said, you're doing this cost segregation thing. What is that? And so long story short, she convinced me to take a wild leap of faith. And I thought, you know, I can always get an accounting job.
Sure.
That was something that I felt confident I could go back and find a job. And I said, there's only a certain few times in our lives we're able to truly take a leap of faith and try something. And so I made that leap. And that was 11 years ago. This was back in 2011. And I started working with Engineered Tax Services. And yes, with my sister, who is one of our partners. And she's been here for 13 years. I've been here for 11 years. And it has been such a wonderful, dynamic, interesting, constantly changing environment. And the way that we get to consult the clients is, you know, it kind of feeds my need for, you know, just enough of that social interaction, but feeling like I'm doing things to help people. And I just love that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't know if you recall, but the founder of Engineered Tax Services, Julio Gonzalez, was a guest on the podcast a couple years ago. And so did you meet with Julio before you joined, or was it just Kim that made the decision?
No, I talked with Julio. I did not meet him in person, but am I allowed to use certain unprofessional words on this podcast?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Use any language you want on this podcast.
Because this is a direct quote. This is not coming from me specifically, just to preface that. Kim called Julio and she said, Julio, if you could clone me, would you? And Julio's response was, does a bear shit in the woods? And she said, well, I think my sister needs to come work with us. And he put together an employment agreement and my sister dropped it on my desk and said, I really think you need to consider this. So yes, I had a conversation with Julio, but it was pretty much already done before I'd even spoken with him.
Kim had him at clone, right?
Yeah.
She had him at clone. So that's awesome. So you started focusing on cost segregation then, I guess. And continues to be your primary focus, or have you also started to get involved in R&D and some of the other services of the firm?
Yeah, I mean, so it started with, I would say, our core services. I mean, energy has been pretty impactful since that time because that was passed in 2006. And so there was just a lot of education to be offered in the marketplace. So 179D deductions, 45L credits for energy efficient housing or energy efficient commercial buildings, cost segregation, which ties into that with depreciation of assets and how we handle that for real estate. And then, yes, the R&D credits really became a heavy focus, I would say probably, 8-9 years ago, looking at that for different entities that, are doing innovation. And then in the last, I would say 3 years, as we have continued to work with a lot of CPA firms all over the country, we just continually see the need for education in the space, not just technical education, but education and understanding what clients are looking for and what they want from their CPA firms. And so, I think one area that I've actually enjoyed the most is over the last few years, our expansion into providing a lot more of the consulting to CPAs and a lot of information and content to help build this space, to help provide information and just improve the industry as a whole so that CPAs are really understanding how to be more advisory, how to understand, to recognize different opportunities, and to advise their clients when that stuff is applicable. Because probably one of the questions I get the most and probably makes me cringe the most is when our clients, when we're contacted directly from a taxpayer who, after discussing whatever strategy with us, then says, but why didn't my CPA tell me about this? And why haven't we had this conversation?
Yep.
And why have I been missing this? Or the second one is, can you just refer me to another CPA? And honestly, that's great. Yeah, sure. I'd love to introduce you to a great CPA that we know and trust. But honestly, I would much rather help their existing CPA understand, what their client is looking for and how to kind of solve that problem so that CPAs aren't losing those clients. So that's kind of, really big picture, but it's how it all ties together from using auxiliary partners like ourselves and like you as well on the IC Disc side and all these other tax credits and incentives that are applicable. It's just a matter of having enough knowledge to be dangerous and know when to identify that benefit when it exists.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Now, I'm curious how you answer that question. Does this mean my CPA dropped the ball? Because I get that question all the time and I do not enjoy that question. I'm curious, how do you answer it? If you tell me how you answer it, I'll tell you how I answer it.
Perfect. I like that. Okay. Honestly, I try in most cases to defend the CPA. I never want to throw someone under the bus, even if I see a blatant error. I will. So my response to that would say, now the tax code is constantly changing. This is an area that is incredibly complex. And the way that I correlate the specialized tax space is in comparing it to the medical space. Say, look, your CPA is like your family practice doctor. You are not going to expect your family practice doctor to diagnose brain cancer or a torn meniscus in your knee. Your family practice doctor is going to refer you to a specialist and you're going to go to an orthopedic or a brain surgeon or whatever it may be. And that's essentially what we are. And sometimes they just don't have the resources. So we provide the education. We'd be happy to talk with your CPA and help them understand and have the conversation. I also actually try to coordinate a call directly with the CPA without their client because they never want them to feel threatened or that I'm going to look bad in front of their client. So why don't you give me your CPA's contact information? I'll call and have a conversation and we can talk about if this is going to work for you or not.
Yeah. So I handle it very similarly. And that's interesting that you focus on the constant changing of it. I talk about the breadth of the tax code. I say, when you factor in federal, state, local, it's so voluminous that you need your CPA to be a generalist. And when it comes to the IC disc, maybe only one out of 100 companies even qualify. So statistically speaking, you're probably the only client at your firm who a disc is even a candidate for. So it's not surprising that, you know, they can't be an expert at everything. And then I might say something like, now, if they didn't talk to you about accelerated appreciation, well, you know, shame on them, but, you know, because that relates to lots of companies. And so I usually do that. And if I use the medical analogy, I say we're the equivalent of a hand surgeon that only operates on the pinky on the left hand. That's how specialized we are. Yeah. And I do the same thing. I try to talk with the CPA without the client, because the CPA will be usually very transparent. I really don't know anything about this. I feel bad. You know, the client brought it to me. I'd never heard of this. And it's almost like they're testing you to see if you're going to throw them under the bus. And I find if you make it safe and kind of tell the same story, hey, look, you're a generalist. You have to know, you know, about a little bit about, you know, 100,000 pages of tax code. You're not an expert. We are. You're actually the smarter one. You don't have to be very smart when you just do one thing. So yeah, kind of a similar approach. Because I also tell my team that we have three constituents who we support. We have the CPA, who's like the hardest working, just kind of stressed, overwhelmed person who's trying their best. Mm-hmm. But, and they always get behind. It's almost like the, I think early in their career, they were maybe proactive. But I have this theory that there's that one tax season that they get behind and they never get caught up. And they, in their whole career, they're never caught up. Because like in Texas, the last due date for franchise returns is November 15th. And if you've been behind the whole year, it's like you just want a break. You take a little time off, holidays, and then the next thing you know, it's January 1st. Any planning opportunities gone? So we have the CPA to support. And then we have the controller, CFO, who, you know, it's not their expertise. You know, they're you know, overworked. Said, and then you have the owner. And I said, now the owner, you have to realize you're going to have to re-explain it to them every single year. And you should do it with a smile on your face, because it's not their expertise, right? They're entrepreneurs. Right. So we, we always try to balance serving those three constituents.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And, you know, I really like your approach with how to handle that conversation, you know, in regards to, you know, why doesn't my CPA know about this? And, you know, to your point, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's an endless tax season anymore. It is extremely difficult. You know, I think this industry, along with every other industry in the country right now, is struggling with staffing issues. Most companies are understaffed, overworked. Workload is just more than they can accomplish. And so the first thing that goes out the window is proactive planning. Yeah. And proactive type measures of any type. I was meeting with a firm a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about, you know, a certain CRM platform and how they can, we have a CRM platform, and, you know, it sets it up to where they can email tax alerts up to their clients that are very, very specific to specific companies and industries, and, you know, give them information that's directly relevant. And, you know, this CPA managing partner kind of rolls his eyes and chuckles at me. And he says, oh, as if I have time to email my clients. He says, I have no time but to be reactive. And to be honest, that's all I've been able to do for the last 15 years. And, you know, I mean, can you blame him? It is difficult because, you know, CPAs also are not necessarily by stereotype the most real-minded. And it would really take that to run a firm and consider the automations that would be required and how to solve that problem when you're constantly running into the next tax deadline. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a really an industry. Yeah, I mean, I think that pertains to any company, honestly, but, you know, certainly we see that in the CPA space right now.
Sure. Well, let's just take a step back for folks who do not know Engineered Tax Services. How do you describe us? How long have they been around? You know, kind of what's the firm all about?
Yeah. So Engineered Tax Services is a specialty tax firm. And we kind of just talked about, You know, just like the medical space, we're very specialized. The company was founded in 1999. So we're going into 22, 23 years in business. And Julio, as you've mentioned, was a guest a few months ago, founded the company back then after having come out of a big four firm with this concept that he said, gosh, these big four firms are capturing all these really neat incentives, these credits and deductions for these clients of theirs that, you know, are Fortune 100 companies paying, you know, mm-hmm. $500,000 a year in tax fees or consulting fees. Julio thought, well, why can't we create a boutique firm and let every other company in the country be able to take advantage of this type of stuff and have that at boutique pricing and get it to where we're so specialized that we can have this kind of economy of scale, bring these strategies and make it more realistic for them to claim all of these incentives during the tax code. So that's kind of, I think, the premise behind creating the company. And then it's just continued to grow and expand. And, you know, I love working with Julio because he is very entrepreneurial. He's always talking about not wanting to become obsolete. He always uses the example of Blockbuster.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the next Blockbuster. And so because of that, you know, he is very driven towards adapting and growing and changing. So always looking at what else can we bring to the table? What additional value can we offer our clients? And that's what I love. So, you know, at this point, we have about 15 different strategies and studies that we perform to capture tax incentives that are applicable or to look at clients who have large taxable events and help them plan for that and even make investments to help reduce those taxable events and increase their net worth and, you know, overall estate planning from a tax standpoint. So, you know, a whole bunch of things there, but, you know, really love what we're doing with being able to work with these clients and solve the problem.
And when you talk about your clients, are you talking about the end user or the CPA firm, or do you think of them both as clients?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's both. I mean, when I'm in my previous, what I was just saying about our clients, it's definitely the end user. You know, in the end, our direct client is the taxpayer. We are doing cost segregation for, or a direct R&D tax credit study, or capturing those incentives or helping them with their tax plan and maybe giving them opportunities to invest and reduce their taxes. But the interesting thing is about 70% of our business is referred to us by CPA firms. And so that is also viewed by us as our client, although there's not that many ways where we actually bill our client, you know, bill our CPA clients directly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're providing value. And I guess I once chatted with a gentleman who told me, it always stuck with me. He said, he goes, well, in the big scheme of things, I'm in the karma business. And it kind of struck me, and I really appreciated that because he was asking me, you know, who can I introduce you to, and you know, who would really help you continue to be successful? And I thought that was kind of him. And he was truly doing it in a very selfless way. So maybe in a sense, I know for me personally, I feel like if we're bringing value to these CPAs and we're helping them every way we can to increase their businesses and grow their businesses, that we can reciprocate in that end, and they reciprocate by referring business, being able to do these studies for their clients, our client as well, who is that end user taxpayer.
Yeah, that really came through at that inaugural HABU conference in Dallas in August that I was fortunate enough to attend. You really could see the focus on the CPA firms, and you are able to serve as a trusted resource to the CPA because they, I mean, I really believe that the vast majority of them are really doing everything they can. You know, and it's so ironic, these poor guys and ladies, their pyramid is upside down. The partners are working the longest hours and their staff are working the fewest hours. You know, that's not how it's supposed to work. And how do you get people interested in buying into the partnership when all they see is this, you know, 7 day a week lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, that's such a huge valid point, because that's exactly what we're seeing in the industry, is there's a little bit of this old school mentality that you know, a lot of accountants start in a big four firm and the demand mm-hmm. is so unbelievable, you know, I mean, a requirement of about working around the clock. So, and you know, we have a younger generation. My kids are all in their mid-20s. My oldest son's 27. And, you know, they have such a different mentality that at first, honestly, I struggled with. I'm not going to lie. But now I look at it and I say, you know, I think they're onto something. Because mm-hmm. they are saying, look, I am not willing to sacrifice these years of my life for a job. I mm-hmm. want to be able to have some balance. I want to make memories. I want to travel. I don't need a whole bunch of stuff. I'm not going to accumulate all the, I'm not going to hurry and buy the house and have all the things. They're very much minimalists and care more about experiences and relationships mm-hmm. and don't, you know, are not as willing to say, sure, let me work 110 hours a week and do this for months on end. And some of the managing partners that I work with, you know, came up in that world. So it's a little bit of like initiation, right? You know, well, there's got to go through initiation to, you know, to earn your way. But we are in a world that I think that that's not realistic anymore. So it is a bit of, you know, the industry needing a wake up call and a shift. And COVID, I think, was an amazing, amazing key to catapulting that. I mean, I think that just catapulted us 10 light years ahead by forcing a lot of these firms to go virtual and to allow work from home scenarios, which, you know, previously would just never be allowed. So some of those things, I think, you know, are positive changes, but I think we'll continue to see it evolve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nor are they willing to relocate every 7 years to be loyal to their company, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Like your father did.
Yep. Just like my dad, you know, upping the, you know, the whole family and the kids and everything and just up and going.
I know. So let's talk about your role with the company. So how do you describe kind of what you do and what do you enjoy the most about serving in your role?
That's hard to define. I guess I wear many hats, and I think sometimes when we're at an executive level, that's just the way it is. So I am on our executive team and we deal a lot with just operational issues and how do we improve efficiency and how do we adopt automations and how do we, you know, continue to provide services to clients and continue to grow, but keep all of the things we discussed, you know, this white glove service and making sure that we're meeting our deadlines and all of those things. So a lot of that, a lot of culture and making sure that we're really focusing on leadership. We have in one of our companies have a thing called a Partner Institute, and it is a 3-year partner track training program. And I've had the opportunity to go through that, and it's been so fantastic. And every part of it is so paramount for really making you sit back and think about planning and being conscientious and intentional with why we're doing certain things. Because when we're in reaction mode, we lose all intent. And intention, I think, is so important. So there's that side of just, you know, management and sort of executive related skills. But what I love, what I really love, I think for me personally, I am motivated and like feel satisfied if I feel like I helped somebody. And so I talk with people all day long. And we work with a lot of really big companies. We work with a lot of big real estate funds and a lot of big groups. But you know what's amazing is when I get to talk to a 20-something year old kid, I shouldn't call him kid, but man.
Yeah.
I'm aging myself when I think of those kids now. And he's saying, oh, I listened to this book about being a real estate investor and I want to become a real estate investor. And I just bought my first rental property. And I can sit and spend a half an hour talking with him about structuring that and how these incentives can help build that. And, you know, I've got one client who I worked with that same scenario probably 10 years ago. And this guy today, he went from buying his first rental property to today, he owns about 14,000 units across the US.
Wow.
And quit his day job and is just managing and running his real estate portfolio and has set up some funds. And to me, like, I think that is so amazing. And that just makes me feel like I did something that made a difference, I guess. So I love helping people. And I love that I feel like we do that. And sometimes it's kind of weird. So I'm like, oh, look, I do tax credits. Let me get you some tax credits. But you know, when we really look at that and people didn't know that was there for them, and then they were able to take that and reinvest that into their company, or it provides some meaningful value for them to invest in their business and continue to grow and make their lives better for their families or whatever it is. That literally makes my soul happy. So yeah, I'm an accountant and specialize in tax credits, but you know, when I get to connect with people, I'm grateful.
I can appreciate that, because that's the, like, somebody was asking me the other day, like, who our ideal client is. And I said, you know, because they're expecting something objective, an objective measure. And mm-hmm. my response was, we have unlimited capacity for companies who we can help and who want us to help them. And we have zero capacity for a-holes. Zero. And it's almost like, I mean, and we're to the point now that, you know, there's such a disconnect between like when you do the work and when you get paid, that it's like, it's just this kind of abstract thing, right? It's like you do good work and, you know, the money kind of takes care of itself. So yeah, I can appreciate that satisfaction from being able to help somebody. And so as we are wrapping up, I have two more questions for you. Three, actually. So one is, I would like you, if you have a story that you think really encapsulates the uniqueness of your culture, the relationship with your client, like a success story that you might share that really maybe is an example of you really were able to help. I'm sure you have dozens of them, but or hundreds, but is there one that comes to mind?
Yeah. You put me on the spot and I gotta really dig deep for that. So, you know, looking specific, you know, similar to the story I shared about the gentleman, you know, who starting up, there's a husband and wife I'm working with in California, and they're doing very well recently. It's pretty new. And they've got a business that has recently become very successful, and it's a little shocking. And for the first time, they were paying a lot more taxes and they realized they might. In California, when you look at it in a top tax bracket, people can pay upwards of 55% in taxes. I know. So, you know, you think, oh my gosh, you know, they made $1 million. And when you look at it and realize they paid $550,000 in taxes, that's the shocking. A lot of people don't realize that, especially if they've never, you know, not everybody makes $1 million a year. So that can be quite shocking. And, you know, I was talking with them and they said, you know, we're actually really interested in real estate. We want to invest in some real estate. And I shared with them a little bit about how that works. And from the tax side, the wife is a part-time teacher.
Okay.
She was doing some substitute teaching. She was like working about 15 hours a week, maybe 20 hours a week. And she was only bringing home maybe $30,000 a year, I think less. Mm-hmm. And I talked with them, we reviewed it, and they said, you realize that if you buy a property this year and your wife stops teaching, you're making $30,000, she would lose that income. If she wants to become a real estate professional and you guys want to get into real estate and start managing rentals and whatnot, you could buy a property. Let's say you buy $1 million property. You could probably write off $300,000 this year. And if you're paying what's called 50% tax, that's $150,000 in tax savings. So you save $150,000 in taxes. Your wife didn't make her $30,000 working, but you just saved $150,000. Plus, we're not even talking about the income you make on your rents.
Right.
A lot of people don't follow those numbers all the way down the path to realize that decision for her to not work earned them way more money by making this investment. And so they were completely mind blown. They were like, this can't be possible. But they did that. And they were so thrilled. And then, you know, they had this extra cash and they rolled that and literally turned it down into a new down payment for another property. And, you know, the tax savings was enough for that down payment. And I mean, it just, it turned into like this huge benefit that they were just blown away with. And I thought that was so fun.
And it all started with a conversation with you and you sharing your knowledge and experience and giving them some encouragement.
Yeah.
It's a great country, isn't it? Like the example you gave earlier of the guy in 10 years who built a tens of thousands of unit portfolio. What other country but here can somebody in 10 years own 10,000 plus rental units? I can't imagine there is another country.
It's incredible, isn't it? It truly is. It truly is incredible. Yeah.
So one of the great things I love about Houston is it's a huge immigrant community from all over the world. It's a very international community. And I love meeting the immigrants because it's so ironic. They better understand, appreciate, and capitalize on the American dream than those of us born here. So I just, I'm always so, it's one of the reasons that Uber rides are great because the typical driver, at least in Houston, is somebody not born in this country. And yeah, it's great hearing the story. Okay. So we were down to the last two questions. So this is another one that's going to make you think. If you could go back in time and give advice to your, say, 25-year-old self, 20-year-old self, with the knowledge that you have looking back, what advice might you give to the younger high-jumping Heidi? That's kind of alliterative, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
High-jumping Heidi.
Yeah. Yep, there you go. Gosh, I think I would say something just as simple as you're okay where you're at. Just trust the process. And I know for me, I was constantly, and I still tend to constantly be looking at the next thing. My mind is just constantly going 100 miles an hour. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? Where do I need to be? Where do I need to go? It's not ever that I've really compared myself with other people, you know, from, oh, I need to have that because they have this. It's never been that. It's just, I've got sort of this intrinsic drive to just constantly be challenged. But that there's a lot of value in that, but I think I've realized that there's a lot of value in allowing yourself to be still at times and trust the process and remember to, you know, silly to say, you know, stop and smell the roses essentially. And just make sure that you're just absorbing the moment and the time and the memories at those times, you know, and everybody says it with your kids. Oh, they grew up so fast. Appreciate it while you got it, you know, and it does. It's so crazy how quickly it goes. And, you know, I wish I could remember every single tiny thing. And, you know, if I was to really sit back and think about it, it would make me so sad because you don't remember all those tiny things. So yeah, that would be my advice. Just
trust the process and maybe cut yourself some slack.
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's excellent. So the last question, is there anything I didn't ask you that you wish I had asked you?
Oh, David, you are so thorough.
Well, I try.
I love the conversation and I appreciate you asking the questions about myself and, you know, and what I find motivating and I think what I enjoy the most, where value comes from, I guess. So, I mean, I don't know if there's any questions in particular I think that I wish you'd asked. I think, you know, if your listeners, we want to help people. We want to bring value where there's value. We want to help solve problems where there's problems. And, you know, we sit back and want to just, I guess, make a difference. So appreciate what you're doing. And I hope this is something valuable to help other people too. So I just
Well, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure. If people want to get a hold of you, do you accept LinkedIn requests? How best should somebody reach out to you? Call you, email, LinkedIn? What would you recommend?
Yeah. You know, if you can share my contact information, I would love to talk with people. And it's fantastic. I have a great scheduling link that makes life easy because phone calls can be difficult. Sure. But LinkedIn or my email is my first letter, first initial last name, H. Henderson at engineeredtaxservices.com. So yeah, if you want to share that. if there's anyone that wants to chat and explore some of the opportunities, I'm more than happy to have that conversation.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I hope somebody will take you up on that. And this has really been fun. And if I don't see you in person before August of next year, I will see you in about 9 months. Can you believe that? It's only 9.5 months away, if I'm doing my math right.
I think you're right. It's unbelievable how quick the time goes anymore.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think November 1st, it'll be 9 months roughly away. Mm-hmm. So, well, hey, thank you again, Heidi. This has really been fun. I really appreciate you taking time, and I hope you have a great afternoon.
All right. Thank you so much. You too.